we have tons and tons of nitty gritty. It was always very important. My co-author, Beth Johnson, we were 100% behind. We needed something that was actionable, like request this document because you want this information for this reason.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Cavagione, and today's guest, welcoming back Alex Brashear. So if you don't remember, Alex was on our podcast actually back in episode 38, and we talked about private lending. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that today, maybe go into a little bit more detail with kind of current events that are happening and different things going on there. We're also going to talk about something really exciting that she has going on. And I don't want to spoil it too much, but I will say she has a book coming out, and it's with Bigger Pockets. So it's a really exciting thing to talk about. So Alex, I am super pumped to have you on today to talk about what you're doing, especially in the current situation right now. And also this book that you have coming out with Bigger Pockets. Like, how exciting is that? Again, my friend, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Mike. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, we're still going to start this off the same way we do every other episode. And for those that may not have gotten a chance to listen to episode 38 yet, because I know the people that are brand new to the podcast love to go back and binge. I know you guys do it because I'm looking at my stats. So if you haven't got to episode 38 yet, we're going to go ahead and let Alex give herself a little bit of her backstory. So Alex, if you could share that with us, who are you? How'd you get started? Why private lending? And what's going on with this book?
So first and foremost, I'm a military spouse. And I bring that up because that pretty much dictates a lot of my life. And I don't mean to say that as like a victim. I choose to let it dictate my life because I want to stay with my spouse. And this has been over 20 years. My spouse is over 20 years in the service. We've been married for 20 years. And the reason I bring that up first is because that requires me to move pretty much constantly. So I am currently sitting in my 20th address in 21 years. We have been stationed literally all over the globe at this point now. And it puts some limitations on what most people would consider a normal career trajectory. So I have a ton of college. Like my W-2 job was, I was a chemistry professor. I went to graduate school to do organic synthesis and pharmaceuticals, but that job doesn't really differ from duty station to duty station. So I quickly figured out I had to find another way to be able to bring income into my household. Not so much because we needed it, but because I needed fulfillment as a spouse that I wasn't just going to, because I don't like children. It's not my thing. So I needed to have fulfillment some other way in my life. And for me, that involved being able to contribute financially to my family. And after taking a couple wrong turns, we tried the landlord thing. We were miserable. We tried the fix and flip thing, even more miserable. And then I happened to just bump into somebody at a RIA meeting 20 years ago. And they mentioned, they're like, oh, if you're a chemistry major, you have to be pretty good at math. And I'm like, yeah, not too bad. My math these days has more letters than numbers, but I could do it. And then he mentioned, have you ever thought about being a loan officer? And I'm like, no, that was never on my radar. And he explained a little bit about it. And then he said, you can work your own hours. And I was in college and I was like, sure, let's do that. And what I actually ended up saying yes to in that opportunity was he was a private lender and he also was a broker for hard money loans. So while he was out on the golf course, I was the one manning the office and driving applications to people. This is back when people were faxing and paging one another. And I got to see the real estate business from the other side of the desk. And I was like, I have these people coming in and they're giving me $700, $2,700 checks. They're complaining about their contractors or talking about their tenants. Meanwhile, my boss, the lender, is on the golf course because it's Florida. That's what you do. You play golf. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to take option B. Thanks. I don't want to be a landlord and I don't want to be a fix and flip. I'm going to do what this guy does. And it's just taken shape over many years. And now it's my full-fledged thing.
Yeah, Alex, that is just every time I hear your backstory with just how this whole thing came up with you, it just boggles my mind because you didn't even have to go through that initial pain of being a landlord and just having to deal with this stuff because you saw it from the very get-go when you started working at this private lending firm and you got a good idea of, hey, the guy who's doing this and I'm working for him and he's out on the golf course, but the other people that are borrowing money from him that are making just as much, whatever, but they're borrowing money from him and they're putting their money into this to buy these real estate assets, but they're constantly complaining about, oh, the toilet broke or something happened with the electrical outlet or somebody slipped and fell and sued me and this blah, 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 blah. Wow. What a perspective to have as you're looking into what's going to be a good way for us to generate another way of a cash flow or passive income into our household. You got to see some of the dirty sides of real estate from the very get-go. And it just, again, like we talked about, I'm pretty sure we talked about this in episode 38 as well. It's amazing that you're able to just run with that because now, hey, instead, let me just build up my capital and just lend money out. What a good way to look at it. Now, moving forward, you've been doing private lending now for a little while. When we last talked, episode 38 was over a year ago. You were talking about some of the different things you were doing, different projects you had going on, and to where you are now, a lot of things have changed over this past year since the last time that we talked. And the last time we talked, it was kind of like at the height of the pandemic and people were in a real estate frenzy. It was like you threw a dead fish in the water with a bunch of blood and the sharks were just like, whoa. So what is it like now versus what it was like a year ago? Being from the private lending perspective, are you still seeing some of that same demand? Has it slowed down or has the pace changed a little bit? What are you seeing from your perspective?
I'm seeing changes on a market by market basis, interesting enough. So my business partner is out on the West Coast in the state of Washington, and she's starting to see definitely some market softening. It's houses are spending a little bit more time on MLS, more than 24 hours, like it was during the frenzy a year ago. But they're spending a little bit more time on MLS. You're starting to see more of those kind of notifications from Zillow. Hey, price reduction. I'm just now starting to see that some of that in Virginia as well, where houses are sitting on the market a little longer. But I don't know if my particular market, it's from a position of the realtors are baking in the 20 buyers showing up. So they're trying to push the price to begin with, or if there's actually like an asset devaluation softening. So I'm still not sure on my market, whether that's the case. I believe on the West Coast where my business partner is going to be is truly some asset devaluation because they went skyrocketed over the last year. So that's putting a lot of people in a scary position where they just don't know how to backstop and prepare for what possibly might be coming.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Alex. And I want to point something out too, though, because I feel like, yeah, we're starting to see homes sitting on the MLS a little bit longer. You're starting to see some of those price reductions. And to me, I feel like we're at a point where we're plateauing. I don't think we're necessarily in some decline or correction, but I think we're at a point where we're plateauing. And like you said, it's going to vary by market, right? Each market has its own intricacies that makes it unique. So out here in Hawaii, like it's not the same as what you're dealing with back in Virginia or what California is dealing with. Could be pretty close, but it's not the same. Now, one of the things that I'm curious about is because you're mentioning homes that are on the MLS, but I would think most of your clients that are coming to you to use private money are trying to do off-market deals. So are you seeing a lot of changes there? Is there less money people are coming for renovations, like working on a flip or anything like that? What kind of trends are you seeing on the off-market space?
I would say a lot of the buyers are actually still finding deals on MLS. They're just potentially getting a little creative. So for example, one thing that's allowing them to be creative is the exit strategy for the property. So if, for example, they are buying this property with the intention of turning it into a short-term rental, and the revenue numbers are there and the revenue numbers are higher, and sure, they could put in potentially a full price offer and still get the cash flow and still operate the property the way they want to. Another thing that I'm seeing now, like you mentioned, they're doing a little less rehabbing. So they're not putting the ultra high end finishes in because they don't have to. We're still in a really tight market. And I agree with you. I believe it's a little bit of a pause as opposed to a correction, especially with the amount of military we have here. We have so much federal dollars in this area that I don't see a devaluation of my market. But you definitely can tell that people are pulling back a little bit. They're not doing brand new roofs, brand new everything. They just want to get it kind of flipped and put it back on the market because we're mid PCS moving season here. So stuff is still coming off MLS. I don't want to give anybody the impression stuff is not selling off MLS. It's just not the super frenzy we saw a year ago.
I'm actually very surprised though that you're saying that a lot of these you're seeing are coming off the MLS. You're seeing people actually like purchase properties off the MLS and flipping them?
Yeah, that's actually the only thing I fund with my own personal capital is fix and flips. Just because during COVID, I was a little worried about underwriting standards going up and down as the viral counts went up and down. But yeah, there's still a fix and flip market here. It's moved away from, you're seeing this on a national level too. It's moving away from the city core. And so in our case, in my opinion, our path of progress is west, basically because we're at the ocean, but our path of progress is west. And they're now moving into areas where 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was all farmland. And now it's houses going up as fast as they can get the wood and the supplies to build them. So we're still seeing that a lot of interest in this area for employment base and for housing.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I spent 15 years over there in that beautiful area of Hampton Roads myself during my time in the Navy as well. And it's very curious to see, though, that you see this trend moving more west and they're trying to build more out west as well. So are you seeing like more stuff happening in like the Williamsburg area? You can definitely see, especially with old Williamsburg, like there's a lot of potential Airbnb potential, short-term rental potential out there. So are you starting to see more of that come up?
They're actually moving out towards Suffolk, up into Smithfield, out towards Windsor, Carrollton, because the people that are working north up on the peninsula, Langley, for example, they're commuting over the James River Bridge and they're going federal employment, they're bringing those federal dollars down from Langley and they're moving into Carrollton, Smithfield, Windsor, Isle of Wight, because they can get a pretty large home at a pretty decent price compared to what their income is. And so it's just pushing literally the path of progress out here is just moving more and more west away from the coast as you have more people that can, again, remote work. Maybe they don't need two people that work or that kind of thing. So that, in my opinion, that's what I'm seeing in my market. They are doing, their city is trying to revitalize certain parts of downtown Norfolk, especially. And actually, Portsmouth is getting a big casino. So people have been buying short-term rental properties in Portsmouth, which right now you're thinking, ugh, if anybody's ever been in Hampton Roads, like it's Portsmouth. But they're banking on all of that commercial dollar coming in with the casino coming, because that's been approved. So again, that's also, so that tends to be the general path of progress right now is west.
Yeah, that's very interesting, especially like when you're talking about like people buying out in Suffolk. Because I remember, now this is a little off topic for the people that are listening. I'm just getting a little nostalgic right now talking about being back in Virginia. I was looking and Suffolk was like the only place in that area that I was able to find a home with a basement, which to me, I thought was really super cool. You don't really see too much of that over there, especially near the water, but not in Virginia Beach or Norfolk or anything like that. It's interesting to see that. And then I had heard rumors that a casino was going up over there in Portsmouth. And I have a friend of mine that invests heavily in that area. And I have a feeling he's going to be very happy very soon. That's really gnarly. And that also goes to show too, like no matter what side of the fence you're on when it comes to real estate investing, knowing what's happening in your local market is super important. And that's going to affect what's going on there with your local MLS and also with your off-market deals as well, is the fact that they're still building up so much and that they're going to build this casino and that they have more development coming in, land development going further out west. Like that's amazing. So there's a lot of potential there and a lot of growth happening in the Hampton Roads area. Again, like we were talking about earlier, it's very market dependent, depending on where you're at. So it looks like you're tucked in a really good spot being in that area. Now, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about this book you have coming out. I believe it's called Lend to Live, Earn Hassle-Free Passive Income in Real Estate with Private Money Lending. And I know it's going to be coming out sometime in July, maybe?
Yeah, from Bigger Pockets. They've told us July 28th.
Fantastic. Yeah. So what can we expect with this book? What kind of topics of discussion? I know it's going to be talking about private lending, but how deep do we go? Is this going to be like a wave top thing, or is this going to be like you're going to get really intricate and really get down to the nitty gritty of what private lending is all about?
We have tons and tons of nitty gritty. It was always very important. My co-author, Beth Johnson, we were 100% behind. We needed something that was actionable, like request this document because you want this information for this reason. So we actually came up with a little system. You'll be the first person we get to talk to about the little system, but the system, because our brand is called Lend to Live, our lending system is called the CPR method, conveniently enough. We came up with that all on our own. That was by mistake. It just worked. But we broke down the loan cycle into multiple steps that relate to the C's and CPR. And then each step is then further broken down into the paperwork you need in that step, the person you need in that step, and the property information you need in that step. So that would be the P. And then the R is going to be the risks and rewards that you need to consider in each step. So we had it nicely little boxed up and broken down, because that's where a lot of people, they get stuck in analysis paralysis. Honestly, they're like, I don't know what to ask for when. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know when to get this person involved. I didn't even know I needed this person to be involved. And that's what we wanted to solve, was basically action step, action step, action step. Do this for this reason, or else you're going to have these repercussions down the road.
So this sounds like this is like the hands-on guide. If you want to do private lending, like this book will be like the purple Bible that everybody knows when it comes to real estate, which is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. This will be like your private lending Bible, essentially. Is this kind of, it's going to be soup to nuts, right? This is everything is going to be listed in this book.
It's going to be everything that a beginner lender would need to know, because it's going to be, it gets a little problematic because you don't want to throw so much at them where they feel overwhelmed. But at the same time, you want to give them enough where they're just, they feel confident enough to take action. And the other thing I'd like to bring up to people is most people will think about a book about private lending will be only applicable to people that want to do private lending. But think about it. If you are an active investor and you want to go start cultivating your own private lenders, you could be like, hey, I'm going to read this book and learn everything I can about private lending. And then I'm going to teach the people in my network how to be private lenders. And they're going to look at me like the education guru and say, hey, look, you're doing all these things to protect my investment in your business, in your investment property. So it's not just a book about private lending. We also wanted to offer it as a guide to active investors, because they really don't have anything, period, on how to work with a private lender. Because anybody that's gotten conventional mortgages or even hard money loans, a lot of work happens in the background that they don't know about, like getting declaration pages for insurance, getting title cleared up, like all of those things magically happen behind the scenes in other lending situations. Whereas when you are the lender, it's suddenly, wait, that's a problem. I didn't even know that problem existed. And so we really wanted to make it so it was applicable to both active investors and people who are interested in lending money.
Yeah, Alex, that is a fantastic point to bring up, because like you said too, for the person that's in there getting the deal and you're getting the loan, you think, oh, okay, yeah, I just apply for it. Everything happens. The magic happens and I don't have to worry about it. It just gets taken care of and I get my money. But what you don't realize is all the small things and all the small details that are happening in the background to make sure it's happening, to make sure that title clears and everything, right? Because what if there is an issue with that? What happens when you run into that? What do you do? And if you don't know, you're going to put yourself in a situation where you're putting both your investor at risk and yourself at risk. So for the real estate investors out there, this is definitely a great way to check it out and learn that side, right? Because you should know when you're getting your money from a private lender, you should know the process of how they're doing it. So you can appreciate more when you receive those funds from them. You can appreciate all the work and due diligence that they do on their end. Because when you look at the entire real estate team, like we're talking about from your realtor to your lender to your property manager, contractors, like when you look at every single piece of what every single person does and you break it down to like bullet points, that in itself can be its own book with what everybody's role in taking down a property is, right? So it's important for a real estate investor to really understand that side. And then like you said too, an investor can read this book and then educate other people at a real estate meetup and things like that. And you know what that's doing for that particular investor? It is widening your pool of potential lenders, because somebody might be like, you know what? I just sold this deal. I got this large chunk of money and I don't feel like investing in something else right now. I may get a little more of a higher return by doing some private lending. Hey, I remember when so brought this up at the real estate meetup. meet up, and maybe I'm going to go read that book right now too, get a good understanding and go lend him some money on his next deal. So you can open up a whole pool of potential lenders that way. So what a great perspective and way to look at it. So I just want to say, I definitely appreciate that. Now, you've been doing private lending for a while, and I know every time anybody that I know has had a question about private lending or anything like that, I say, hey, there's this one person that you should go talk to, or there's this group you should go check out on Facebook. And I always send people to check out your Facebook group or send them to go talk to you. Now, I've met a couple other private lenders out here, some local meetups here in Hawaii, and it's really funny because like everybody that does private lending is very astute about what they do. Like they really understand what they're getting themselves into, because it is a lot of work on the back end that I don't think a lot of people realize. For those that are borrowing the money from the private lenders, show them a little love and appreciation, because they are putting in a lot of effort to make sure that you're getting the funds that you need. So Alex, if we could, let's maybe talk about that a little bit, especially like what you do on your back end side. And then we can talk about your Facebook group, because right now I know it's probably like one of the largest private lending Facebook groups out there. You have literally a large following in there, and you bring some great guest speakers in there to have conversations about different topics, and not always private lending. So it's a great place for real estate investors to check out. I'm part of that group as well. But Alex, can we talk about some of the back end stuff? Maybe some things that people might not understand that you do as a private lender. Let's say you're just starting a transaction. Somebody says, hey, Alex, I've got this flip I'm working on. I need another $50,000 to do some renovations on it. What, like, how does that look when they first approach you and say, hey, I need 50K?
So I will speak to the way I do private lending, because as you've discovered, everybody's going to do private lending a little bit differently. And I can tell you the consensus of what's happening amongst the people I know that do private lending. But private lending, and the way I am using this term, is that you're talking to the individual or maybe their business entity that is lending the capital. So that capital has little to no strings attached. The reason I bring this up is because there is a movement in the hard money loan space to rebrand themselves as private lenders, or they'll say, I'm a direct private lender. And that is a very different business model. And I'm not trying to poo on hard money lenders. I'm just explaining from an active investor standpoint, it's night and day. And I would say before COVID happened, I guarantee you most active investors didn't care where the capital came from, wasn't even on their radar. And then COVID happened, hard money lenders shut their doors because their capital came with restrictions. It came from a business line of credit. It came from pooled money, whatever those restrictions were. So the way I am using private lending is I'm an individual. I have maybe some sort of business entity. I am lending out my own capital or capital that I closely control. And now saying that, it tends to be very relationship-based. You're not going to message a private lender and go, hey, what are your rates and terms? You might, but you're probably just going to make them mad. You're not going to get any actual helpful advice or answers, because they want to get to know you as a person. There's always this debate in the private lending space. And it's really funny because my co-author, Beth, is the opposite I am, which is why we make a very good team. So there's the debate between the jockey and the horse. Do you bet on the person or do you bet on the property? Which one are you doing more due diligence on? It's not saying you're going to completely ignore one over the other, but I would say it's like 80-20, going back to Pareto's principle. So I am on the side where I'm 80% person, 20% property, because I personally believe that an individual, like a really good individual, can turn around even a slim margin deal and be okay, versus a person that doesn't have any ethics, isn't transparent, doesn't know their numbers. You could hand them a deal on a silver platter and they'd still be able to screw it up. And I don't want deals that get screwed up, because I'm a lender. I'm in this for a win situation for the property, for the borrower, and for myself. Whereas Beth is more on her famous line is properties don't let me down. So she's 100%, again, 80% about the property. And she's going to make sure you check out as a borrower with experience and things like that. So I would say building that relationship and trying to get an idea of who am I talking to? Am I talking to the person that likes the jockey, or am I talking to the person that likes the horse? And then you're going and saying, okay, what do you lend on? Where do you lend? Because private lenders, again, my definition of private lenders, we are hyper-local. So I only lend in Hampton Roads, Virginia, because I know this market. It's in my backyard. If I want to drive by and make sure your contractors are there on the day you said they were going to be there, I can do that. So if you have a quote private lender telling you they lend in all 50 states, no problem, chances are they are a hard money lender that is calling themselves a private lender. So that would be the other distinction I would make. But generally, the terms are going to be, from a loan perspective, the terms are going to be similar. to a hard money lender. They're going to be 0 to 3-4 points as origination. They're going to be whatever kind of the market prevailing hard money loan is. So anywhere between 8. I've seen 14% here on the East Coast happen for a first lien. But the thing I bring up about the reason the strings attached conversation is important to active investors is I can go and tell my borrower, do you want to make interest only payments for the next 3 or 4 months? And they'll go, no, if I don't have to do that, I don't want to do that. Because anybody who's ever done a fix and flip, you are like hemorrhaging money for the first 3 or 4 months. So if there's some way they can just stop that, they'll do that. So they will actually pay 2 percentage points higher in interest rate because that I tell them you don't have to make interest only payments. We'll roll it all into the end. Whereas when you're talking to a lender that has all those strings attached, they can't do that. They don't have that flexibility because they sold a bank on their business model. They sold a pool of investors on their business plan and how they were going to do loans. And they need those distributions to go back out the door to dividends to their investors. So that's why I say knowing the source of the capital of the lender you're talking to really changes both the kind of initial conversation and also how your deal flows.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, I really wish I would have had this conversation with you a couple months ago because I almost did a private lending thing with a flipper out here locally. And I wound up not doing it because I didn't realize, I thought, oh, maybe they would make the interest-only payments to me. And then at the end, I would get my capital back. But they were looking to do essentially that. Hey, we don't want to do the interest-only payments. We want to pay everything on the back end when everything's done. And in Hawaii, because of how long the permitting and stuff takes, you're looking at 6 months. So I'm like, so I'm going to tie my money up in here for 6 months and then I'm going to get it back. And it was at 12%. And I'm like, this, it's a decent return, but I was like, I'm tying my money up for 6 months. And I just didn't realize that was something that a lot of private lenders are doing. Man, I wish we would have had this conversation a couple months ago.
I wouldn't say a lot.
or some. I didn't realize like that was like a thing that you can do. It's your money. You can do whatever the heck you want, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing private lending. But it's interesting to know that you do it that way. And then the other thing that I thought was absolutely awesome is how you and your co-author, not really polar opposites, but like you have the opposite look on when it comes to the property versus the person. And just knowing you for the amount of time that I've known you, I was a little surprised, but at the same time, like not that you're 80% on the person because I know like how you are, you're going to vet somebody and you're going to make sure they know what they're doing before they go in here and do this. And at the same time, like they'll be able to make this property work and totally 100% get it. Like where you can have somebody that's given a deal on a silver platter. This is the easiest thing to do. Like all you have to do is sign your name and they'll misspell their name because there are people out there like that. They're just like, ah, yeah, whatever. Cool. And they'll mess it up. Just, yeah. It's having that comfort level. The fact that you actually build relationships with the clients that you work with and everything, I think that's super important. And it also goes back to a lot of things that I talk about here on this podcast when it comes to networking and building relationships. Like when you go out to these meetups, if you meet somebody that's a private lender, even if you're not going to use them anytime soon, build that relationship, build that bridge, start talking to them, start picking their brain. Because you never know if you find something in the future and you're like, hey, this is a really good deal. And I know this great private lender that can really help me out. You have that rapport and that relationship built up and they have that trust in you because they've seen you at these meetups. They've heard you talk about what you're doing. And they understand that you've got a good head on your shoulders when it comes to these things. This all kind of ties back into what I talk about with networking and building relationships and why it's so important as a real estate investor to build these authentic and genuine relationships, not just saying, I've got a connection with this person.
Yeah.
We'll get back to the show after a brief break.
What's going on, everybody? So I know there's a lot of busy individuals out there like myself. I find myself sometimes struggling with time management when I'm dealing with things with my blog, my podcast, managing my social media accounts. Sometimes it can be really taxing and time consuming. So one of the things I started doing recently that has been super helpful is outsourcing some of this work to subcontractors and freelancers. And I'm doing that through a website called Fiverr. I have a link in the podcast description below that will take you to Fiverr and give you a discount up to $100 off your first order with them. Check it out. It's been a lifesaver for me. It's been saving me a lot of time and a lot of stress, and I really think it could do the same for you. Check out the link below or go to www.averagejoefinances.com/Fiverr, Fiverr. Real estate investors know they're leaving money on the table every time they pass a rundown property and do nothing about it. Deal Machine lets you and your team pin distressed properties, look up the property owner on the spot, and send a personalized postcard to the owner directly from the app, all within a few seconds. You can set up mail on repeat to make sure you won't forget to follow up, and while the app is sending a custom postcard, you can look up the owner's phone number and email instantly. Plus, if you want to find even more off-market deals, you can build a team of people to drive for you. You just get to track how many properties your deal finders add every day, making your deal finding a scalable and profitable process. Go to dealmachine.com and use the code AVERAGEJOE, that's AVGJOE, for 15 marketing credits during your free trial. That's AVERAGEJOE, AVGJOE. Let's get back to today's episode.
It's funny you mentioned that because I have that happen all the time. But another, like when you're talking about the 50K example, to backpedal a little bit, something that I have discovered in my own kind of business practice, shall we say, is I can actually use private lending to augment my other areas of real estate. So for example, I run short-term rentals and I own short-term rentals. And these people in my network, you think about a Venn diagram, there's people in the military, people investing in real estate, and there's that little sliver in between where most of my network happens to be, for better or worse, that's what it is. But there's, you've slogged through things together for the last 20 years, you speak all the same acronyms, you just jive. And I've had some of them come to me and say, hey, I want to buy this short-term rental. And anybody who's ever had to stand up a short-term rental, like the first 3 or 4 months, again, you're hemorrhaging money, whether you're doing renovations or not. You have to buy the furniture and the decor and the technology and get all the stuff connected. It's just, it's a thing. So what I've done is I've offered them private money. And I say, okay, for as long as this loan is outstanding, my business has to manage the property. And they'll work to get the capital coming in because, again, they can potentially get more revenue from it as a long-term, as a short-term rental versus long-term rental. So I have another client that I could manage the property. My co-hosting business could manage that property for them while I had money that was also working. So I had a little bit more control over the deal. So I was okay being in second lien because they're a good equity buffer for these particular deals that I did this. So it actually ended up helping me build other real estate businesses, having private lending and having those relationships with people where we felt safe enough to say, hey, look, I'm buying this. I'm doing the 10% down second home loan thing, but I don't have $50,000 to do blah, 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 and stand it up. And I also don't know how. And I really need to know how because I'm closing in 30 days on a short-term rental. And so it really can be that flexible. And I don't think a lot of people, I will tell you, like active investors, you guys zero in on the interest rate. What's your annualized interest rate? I'm like, dude, if you're borrowing like $100,000 over the course of 12 months, is $1,000 going to be the hill you want to die on? Or are we going to sit here and have a conversation about what I can bring value to you as an active investor and what you can bring value to me as a lender? Let's start there instead of let's drill you down to the lowest annualized interest rate we can possibly get. I'm like, okay, you're not my borrower because that's not how I operate.
Alex, that is a fantastic point. And it's funny, it's something I want to bring up to all my listeners here. So when Alex and I were talking about getting this scheduled and having her back on the podcast, we were talking on Facebook Messenger and I was talking to her about some things that I was doing right now with Velocity Banking. And we were just talking about like the difference between simple interest and amortized interest on a mortgage and different things like that. And we just had this long conversation and just geeked out. I think we were going back and forth for like an hour in Facebook Messenger. And I was like, wait, what were we talking about again? Oh, that's right. We're trying to get you back on the podcast here to talk about your book that's coming out. This is one of the things that I'm talking about when you build these genuine connections with people and we could just reach out to each other out of the blue and we could just start talking about just finances, interest rates, and different things like that. And stuff normally other people would be like, oh, what, why do you geek out about that stuff? Because it's, for me, when it comes to the numbers, I don't even like math. I'm not even a big math guy. I just like making more money and building wealth and for myself and my family. You know, to be able to sit here and have these conversations and be like, oh, hey, I'm doing this and I'm experimenting with this and trying this. And by doing it this way, I'm saving this much on my interest. And by doing things differently this way, I'm able to invest in this. And we're just sitting here geeking out and having this whole conversation. I just want to point that out, guys, because it's one of the things that I just love about being in this community is when you make these connections like this. It's just super fun. And Alex, like when you're talking the possibility of being that second lien loan on a property, like for a short-term rental and things like that, like a lot of people don't look at it from that perspective. They're not saying, oh, I didn't realize she could help me with a short-term rental or anything like that. I thought I can only use her for a flip and things like that. But it's, as a private money lender, it's your, like, again, it's your money. You can do with it what you will. And you have that experience in that short-term rental space, and you're a lot more comfortable there, and you're able to help other people in that aspect as well. So that is just something that's super awesome. And for those of you that are listening, if you're ever in, what part of Virginia is it in? Is it in Williamsburg? Or where's your cabin at?
I'm in Lexington, Virginia.
If you're ever in Lexington, check out her short-term rental that she got there. I see it on social media all the time, especially in the wintertime with that hot tub and the view with the snow. It was very nice. Yeah. Awesome.
It was slammed this winter. It really surprised me because I'm like, who's going to go up there in the middle of the winter? Oh yeah, there were people.
All the stuff that you were using to market, it was like, hey, look at the beautiful views with the snow and this really nice hot tub. Like that was like, I think that was the big selling point for people. Yeah, it's the winter. I'm going to go chill in a hot tub and enjoy this. That's really awesome, Alex, because there's a lot of people out there right now, like when you look at investing in real estate, you're trying to figure out a way, especially with interest rates going up the way they are right now on the government side, like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. So when you're borrowing these loans and you're buying these properties, your buying power has changed drastically. So people are looking at, what are some other exit strategies that I can have when I'm purchasing these properties? And if you're in an area where you could do a short-term rental and it works, like maybe that's something you should consider as well. So I know this episode isn't about short-term rentals, but just to point out the fact that there are so many different exit strategies besides just the what you think typically, I'm just going to buy a rental property and I'm going to rent it out and that's it. And if the numbers don't work well, then that's the only thing that I had going for me. No, there's other outs and there's other ways to make things work. But anyway, Alex, I want to kind of circle back now again to your book and see if is there, you said this is a great thing for somebody that's getting started as a private lender. Now, as the book goes into more detail, so you said as you're reading it, you get to learn about the different things that private lenders should be looking out for. Can you touch on some of those things? Like you talked about it a little bit earlier on, but what are some things that you see that are common in private lending, especially for a new private lender? What do you see are like some of the common mistakes that people make that this book is going to help alleviate?
A lot of people, shockingly, are quite happy to hand over very large sums of money to like their cousin's best friend who decided they wanted to be a real estate investor.
Oh, geez.
And there is no title policy. There is no hazard insurance. There's no lien recorded. None of that happens. Or in the case like the short-term rental, I know a very good friend right now. She did something like that where she came in a second lien. I think she's actually in third lien. She discovered later she's actually in third lien. I was like, when did you send over the funds? And she told me. And I was like, which title company did you close with? And she's, what do you mean? They already own the property. And I'm like, no, it still needs to go through title search. It still needs to have all these things. And it was very fortunate that her borrower did keep their word and did record the lien, but she left it with the borrower to record the lien. If they didn't do that, would have been a problem. So I always tell people two cardinal rules. No money changes hands outside of closing. So if somebody is coming up to you and saying, I'll fund 100% of everything, we just need $5,000 to get started, that's a scam. That's not even a private lender. That's a total scam. Don't do that. And then second off, only use a title company, closing attorney somewhere. Because again, you're not having any money directly change hands before closing. So all of that needs to go through the title company. And if you have at least a decent title company, they're going to help keep you in the guardrails at the bowling alley when you pull up the little bumpers for the kids. That's the title company for a new lender. They're going to be able to pull title for you. You should be able to call them up and say, hey, I don't know what all these paragraphs are on here. Can you talk me through? Should this be something I'm worried? Same thing with the hazard insurance, having a good hazard insurance broker. Get them up up on the phone, say, hey, this is the policy they sold me. Am I adequately insured if something goes wrong? If this property burns down the day before it hits MLS because it's a fix and flip, am I still covered? So it's another thing about private lending I love. It's very collaborative and you have tons of resources and places you can go to ask questions. But again, a lot of people don't even know who to go ask these questions to. They're just like, I don't know what to do, so I'm just not going to do it, as opposed to let's go find someone to answer these questions for me.
Yeah, that's all great points, Alex. I definitely appreciate that. And one of the things I could say I 100% appreciate is just how in detail you go there. Because, you know, for somebody that's just getting started out in private lending, this might not be something you're thinking about. You might not in the back of your head be thinking, oh, hey, everything's good to go, but all of a sudden the house blew up the day before it was supposed to hit the MLS. And these are things that you need to be thinking about. And maybe somebody who's learned from some of those experiences like Alex, and she's able to get out ahead of that stuff. And it's something that the book is going to help guide you to avoid some of these mistakes that other private lenders have made in the past. And also things that she's learned over her time and her co-author have learned over their time doing private lending. All right, Alex, I'd like to transition the episode right now into something, and it's going to tie into everything we've been talking about today, but I want to transition to what we call the final round. I'm going to ask you four questions, three of them are hard-hitting questions, and one of them is an opinion question at the end. And then we'll go from there. But if you're ready to get this party started, we'll start the final round.
I'm ready. Let's rock and roll.
Okay, here we go. First question of the final round is, Alex, what's the biggest mistake you've ever made? And this could be private lending related or just real estate related.
I had a long-term rental, because I was an unwilling landlord because the military moved us when we weren't supposed to move. And I thought this property would be managed well by a property management company that came highly recommended from another investor. But this property was very different than anything else the property manager traditionally handled. They handled lot and block single family homes in suburbs. We had not that. We were on an island. We had horse property. We had barns. We had fencing. We had the whole nine yards. And they were just very ill-equipped to handle that. And back then, I didn't know to ask, what types of properties do you normally handle? Because they had not a clue about how to handle horse property. Nothing. They didn't know how to properly screen for tenants. They didn't know how to evaluate damage done to the property. Like, it was just a nightmare. So I would have any long-term rental or a long-distance rental, make sure you hire a property management company that actually understands the type of property we're trying to rent.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point and good lesson learned for you there. So, and you know what? The military, it does that to us, is, and that's to make us accidental landlords. Our next question kind of ties into this, and that is, what is something that you have learned that you wish you knew when you first started? We'll keep this in the private lending realm.
Oh my God, I would have started earlier and I would have started making it more formalized earlier. We had done it just as individuals. Again, that Venn diagram of people in military, people in real estate, it tends to be a very small circle. So anytime we got stationed somewhere else, we would bump into other people who were in the military and investing in that area. And we would maybe JV with them or just do an unsecured loan with them because we've known them for 10 years because we bounced into them in the last three duty stations. And then it wasn't until COVID where just everything coalesced into the perfect situation where we're like, all right, it's time to do this for real. Like, we've done this enough times just goofing off. Like, now it's time to do this for real. And I wish I had done it for real longer ago.
No, fantastic answer. Fantastic answer. And again, this is all going to roll into the next question. And so with all this experience that you've had, I'm sure that there's many things that you've learned. For a complete newbie that's coming out, do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend to them as they're just getting started in private lending?
Oh my God, trust but verify, because they'll meet you for coffee. They'll show up to Starbucks and they'll meet you for coffee. But guarantee you, if they show up late, or they just don't show at all, do not chase them down. Do not worry about it, because chances are they're not your borrower. So I would say really having an understanding of who they are. Again, I'm the person, I'm the jockey type of lender. Like, I'm going to go Facebook stalk you. I'm going to Google your name. I'm going to put you into a national database and check and make sure things are legit. Like, I'm going to look on public records and see that every deal you're telling me you have experience doing, that you or your business entity is on title. And if you're not, I'm going to come back and say, hey, you had this address down as a property for experience. What's going on? They're like, oh, I was helping a guy out and I was mentoring him. And I don't know that. You're not on title to me. You have no skin in the game. So I would say trust, but verify.
That is a fantastic point. And again, there's a reason why we say that in the military all the time too. You have to trust, but verify. Otherwise, people can get hurt or die. And in this case, people can lose a lot of money. All right. So the final question here, and this is the opinion-based question. So I'm going to preface it with this. Besides your own that is coming out, do you have a favorite business, investing, or real estate related book or podcast or both?
So the book, my absolute favorite book, it's not 100% investing based, but I think it's very applicable because it's about mindset. And if your home base isn't a good foundation, any decisions you make past that point, including investing, aren't going to be applicable. So it's an oldie but goodie. It's called Psycho Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. It was written, I think, back in the early 60s, so it is a little dated. But basically, it's a lot about visualization and kind of picturing the way you want things to go. And then your subconscious kind of takes on. And it's basically, if you have a bad dream and you wake up and your adrenaline's running, you're sweating, it's because your brain doesn't know the difference between what you have dreamt in your mind and what actually happened. And he discovered this very early on in the 1960s. So it's a fantastic book. Again, it's another very actionable book. He gives you exercises to go and do as you work through the book. So again, not necessarily investing book, but I'm very much the mindset has to be foundationally good, because any decisions you make with a good mindset are going to be more successful than any decisions you make with a bad mindset.
Now, that's fantastic. What a great recommendation. And I'll tell you right now, this surprised me very much. That was your answer, because this is actually the second time someone's recommended this book since I started asking this question. And the first time the person recommended this book, he said, oh yeah, this is probably not one you ever hear of too much and this and that. And I'm like, and now I heard it twice. So yeah, I wrote this one down. Was it Psycho Cybernetics? Yeah. Wow. Okay. I'm going to have to check that one out. That's getting added to my list, because now, like I said, this is the second time I heard about it. Now, Alex, I do have one more question for you. I didn't lie, but the final round is now complete. But I have probably the most important question of all, because we've been sitting here having this awesome conversation, and it was a very freelance conversation, as I knew it would be with the two of us, just about the personal and private money lending and just what you're doing personally in your own journey. And then when we talked about your book and everything. So for the people that are listening right now, they're like, Alex, like everything that she's doing is really awesome. And you had mentioned something about her Facebook group and everything like that. So people are like, hey, I want to know more about Alex Brashears, and I want to know more about her book that's coming out with Bigger Pockets. So do you have a website you can share with us? Also, any social media pages you'd like to share, especially that Facebook group? Please do so now.
Yeah, I would say the Facebook group is probably your first go-to. I'm in there all the time. The group is called Lend to Live Private Lending Lessons. So we're literally teaching people about private lending. Everything in the group is free. But the other thing that we do in the group, like you mentioned, we have speakers come in, but we also have started doing open office hours. So twice a month, we spend an hour, we're on Zoom. Anybody can come and go. You can come ask questions, whether you're an active investor or someone that wants to get started in private lending, or you're already private lending and you just want to find community. We are now doing this twice a month now. So please come by, introduce yourself. We love talking to people. I'm on LinkedIn. So my URL, live passively or invest passively to live actively, because that is how I view the world now. Instead of the return on my capital, I'm looking at my time commitment in projects, because that's becoming more and more valuable now, as opposed to my return on investment is how much mental brain damage am I going to have to go through to get this investment done. But definitely LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. Obviously, I'm on Bigger Pockets. Feel free to send me a connection request or send me a message if you happen to be part of the Bigger Pockets community as well.
I love that. I love that, especially your LinkedIn link as well. So it's invest passively to live actively. That is just super awesome. And what a great way to look at it, investing passively so you can live that active life and go enjoy life. And that's one of the benefits that you have being a passive investor, and especially with what you're doing. So Alex, this was a fantastic conversation, as I knew it would be. I'm super excited to get this one out there, to share what you're doing and what you've continued to do since the last time we talked back in episode 38. And you're just out there just killing the game. Now with this book coming out with Bigger Pockets, it's just super exciting time. And I'm glad to be a part of this with you and part of your journey as you're moving forward and just crushing it. Alex, thanks again so much for coming on the show to talk with us today.
Thank you for having me and for educating everybody that you do. I equally think you do a great job helping other people understand finance.
I greatly appreciate that. And we're out of here. Aloha from Hawaii. Thank you for making it to the end of this episode. Greatly appreciate you being here with me today on the Average Joe Finances podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make this the episode that you go leave us a 5-star rating or subscribe to our YouTube channel. The Average Joe Finances podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Have an outstanding day.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.